What's that bottom curve?
This one here?
Yeah.
That's those are college students from Loyola Marymount.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I see.
Yeah, that's the red one is Citrus College. They're probably the least discriminating listeners.
So what do you do with the people doing lots of training but who don't have good hearing any longer? Where do you put them in here?
They go into marketing. They're talkers. They're not listeners. Or sales.
I have an observation I'd like to get your opinion on.
Yeah.
One of the things that's going on here is kind of a presumption that somebody would go into this experience knowing that they have a preference. But what if we turn that around and say that perhaps these untrained listeners actually had never gone through your test, would never know they had a preference because they wouldn't necessarily understand that they had an option. And could it be, from a marketing point of view, and even from a preference point of view, that anybody who goes to buy headphones might actually be much more likely to like whatever they bought if they didn't know that they had an option of something else.
Yeah, no, that's huge. I think people buy things because they can't go in and go A, B, C, D like they're doing here. If you just go into the Apple store and you've read Beats, you've seen Beats commercials and you don't actually A, B them, and you're also fully aware that they're Beats because you can see them. And that's a huge, huge factor. And if you can eliminate that so you can just focus on the sound and nothing but the sound, people will tend to gravitate towards something that's accurate and neutral.
So the marketing people win after all, huh?
Well, we have to get the marketing people to market sound quality. And right now they claim that they sound good, but there's no proof.
But there's a bias against that. I come from the manufacturing side myself, and the huge problem that you have is that nobody can hear a magazine page.
Right.
So, and no offense to Mackie, but one of the things that Greg did that was so brilliant was he spent hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, convincing you that what you wanted was knobs per dollars, not what it sounds like. You know, how do you run a magazine ad when you've got 5, maybe 7 seconds at the most for a guy to turn a page?
Yeah.
And have him be convinced that he cares about what your product sounds like when he can't even hear it.
Yeah. So, again, so to sort of keep on with your point, so one of the things we developed, and this is not a product, or it's just a tool that we use, is that we've written this app where we can virtualize, we can measure, 100 headphones and put them in this iPad as a set of filters, and put on our replicator headphones, and you can switch between any model that's on here, and you can change the music, and you get a graph showing the response. And we've actually, used this to rather than carry around 100 headphones in your car, you can just take this out and demo it. And there's even a blind mode where you hit that and all the brands and prices disappear, so you can actually listen to different headphones and choose the one based on the sound. And we've talked to marketing, and the biggest application for this is simulating in-ear headphones, because people don't want to go into a store and stick things in their ears because they don't know if the last person did it. And it's really hard to demo an in-ear headphone. So if we can demo an in-ear headphone over an over-the-ear headphone.
But don't those sound the most different depending on how they're inserted? I know when I play with them, I twist them one way, they sound great. Twist them another way, they sound dreadful. Most of the time, they sound somewhere in between.
Yeah. Well, with this app, they would always sound great.
All
I have a follow-up comment to that because I used to work with Garwood, the guys that invented in here, and we would always recommend to people if they were professional users that they go to one of our approved audiologists to have a custom interval made because we knew that that problem existed.
Yeah. I had a custom mold made years ago that I found very uncomfortable. I threw them out. I
should have gotten one of our guys.
Yeah. Apparently, people have told me that when they cure, how you know when you pull them out, they can actually not be quite right. And there's people now that are addressing that.
Does the virtualizer app actually, obviously it has all the modeling you talked about before, does it take into account if that's being used as a playback? Is that just for control or is that the actual audio source?
Well, you can hook up a headphone right directly, or you can get a...
I was wondering, if you go direct, does it account for the amplifier and the DSP and DAC response of the iPad?
Yeah, we've measured it. It's not a very big...
It's significant?
Yeah, okay. When you compare the head, it's very small. So, you know, when we show this, we have a benchmark DAC-2 or whatever that we can hook up to it. So that's it's digital right up to the headphone.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is this just for in-house consumption, or is this?
Yeah. We basically wrote most of the code for this testing these headphones, so it was easy to make this an app for demoing. So right now it's internal.
Do you have any plans to turn this into a POS?
Point of sale?
To change the POS.
Point of sale is obvious. That's an obvious app.
I'm sure there are legal ramifications if you have somebody else's name on it. They'll challenge you with their data.
Maybe it would just be our headphones.
Yeah. It's really sad because there's quite a few, I'm sure, DAC manufacturers and other people who love headphone amplifier manufacturers who'd love to get their hands on them. They can just go 16 different headphones.
John?
Has there been any studies done on quality of experience based on time spent listening?
You mean listening to a speaker or a headphone or
listening fatigue for a long duration?
Oh, listening fatigue.
Yeah, it's true.
I can tell you there's been studies done that show after about 40 minutes, people's performance tends to go down in listening tests, you know, loudspeaker tests.
Is that because of the adaptation characteristics of the human hearing system?
No, I think they're just fatigued. Depending on the test, of course, if you're doing codec tests or where it's very hard to hear the differences or speaker cable or whatever, you're going to go insane after 5 minutes.
Codec tests, 5 minutes is it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Unless it's really a bad codec.
Yeah, so we try to limit our tests to 30 minutes tops for speakers and headphones.
So I don't need to pay $1,500 for a good set of headphones. I just use this virtualizer and use a different POS.
No more than 20 seconds. 25 seconds. There's a new ITU standard where they're trying to reduce them to 5 or 10 seconds, right? No comment? JJ.
What?
There's a new ITU BS, 17, no, that's the loudness model.
Yeah, 1770-71 is the radio loudness model.
Yeah, the MUSHRA. At LA, they're giving a paper on what the, to modify the test, and they're recommending music samples no more than 5 to 10 seconds. Maybe 15 at the most. So you know, there's lots of evidence. The shorter the music sample, the more discriminating you can be, the more efficient.
There's a difficulty with Mushra in any case. You're trying to sum up many dimensions in one dimension, and that just doesn't work so well.
Sort of like a preference test. Yeah.
You know, so I always use distance test, not NOS.
I had a question about way back when, in that second paper, about loudspeakers and where you're twiddling both knobs at the same time, which was a little pure preference, whereas some of the other people were asked a question about spectral balance, like they were explicitly, these were trained listeners who were evaluating things based on the spectral balance.
Mm-hmm.
So I see a contradiction, and I don't know if it's because of the different tasks. If you take a loudspeaker that was very, very flat, anechoic, and you see that people will tend to prefer that versus ones that are less flat. If you put that in a real room, it gets the tilt, it gets that you know, the bass boost from the room. Mm-hmm. And then you're saying, or I understood from the presentation, that if they're then given a pair of knobs, they'll tend to shelve off the treble and boost the bass somewhat. So doesn't that imply that if you had a non-flat loudspeaker, a loudspeaker B, who already had that effect of the bass being boosted and the treble being shelved,
mm-hmm.
in a plain old shoot-off, bake-off between those two, the A, the flat one, and B, the one that already includes the, you know, baked in the twiddling,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't people tend to prefer the B?
The twiddle one?
Yeah.
Well, the whole point is that if you design a speaker to be flat anechoically and you put it in a room, it'll have that. The in-room response will match that tilt.
But what didn't, or maybe I misunderstood, didn't one of the slides show that even with loudspeakers in a real room, when given the knobs, people still preferred to add some bass and roll off some treble?
But not as much as the room gain. So they wanted to add a little more bass, but
yeah,
as much as the room gain.
Right. If you put the speaker in the room and the room adds 3 dB, 3, 4 dB, they may add 6 dB, another 2 dB that isn't there without any EQ. And as far as the treble goes, they're basically, if the speaker is equalized flat in the room, they're basically turning the treble down. So essentially, it's the speaker without any EQ above 2K.
Sean, have they given any acclimatization time? Like, were they allowed to listen to the speaker, say, in the room for, you know, just freely for a few minutes to let their body sort of adjust to, oh, this is the frequency response to these speakers, now I'm going to play with the knobs? Or was it just,
here's
the count, 5 seconds?
No, they were given instructions, and, you know, they could play with it. But they did 27 trials, so after about 3 or 4 trials, they were getting acclimatized pretty quickly.
Would anybody turn it down after, like, they'd adjusted it up previously, or were they mostly, like, push it up and then just leave it?
People would, everyone had different strategies how they would do it. Some would turn the bass up, and then they turn the treble down. You know. We didn't really closely track how they were doing it. We just captured the final setting.
So where they ended up at was mostly what you were
interested. Yeah, and we had them, you know, it's based on an average of 9 trials, so they had 9 opportunities to tell us where they wanted it.
How consistent are they among trials?
I think it was less than a dB, pretty good, and it was quarter dB increments. So the last thing we've been working on is we've been using these standard grass plate coupler pinna, but one of the things we found was that there's been a lot of arguments internally how to measure headphones. Some people argue get rid of the pinna, just measure it on a flat plate. And one of our strongest arguments for measuring it on a pinna is that it more accurately simulates the leakage effects. And I think the leakage effects are huge. In loudspeaker research, we found that the bass alone accounts for 33% of the listener's preference. So with a headphone, you would expect if the bass is not right, you're throwing away 33%. But the problem is we found that these pinna that are standard are too stiff. And when you put a headphone on them, they don't accurately simulate the leakage on a real listener's ear. So Todd did this nice study where he took 10 headphones and measured them on 10 listeners using small microphones in the blocked ear canal. And he also compared it using plate measurements. And we basically took the standard IEC PINA, and he developed a model of it. It was all done using an iPhone and free software on the web. And then he just kept tweaking. One of the first thing we found is that the standard ITU PINA really sits out from the ear way too far, so a headphone doesn't really go around the ear. Does anyone know why they did that? So you can get an over-the-ear hearing aid on this. So basically, he, based on the measurements on real listeners, he kept tweaking the model until he could accurately simulate the leakage effect. And we found with a plate, you don't really get these are errors. So the closer it is to zero, the more accurately it reflects leakage measured on real listeners. And you can see the plate tends to not accurately capture the leakage. It's showing you there's a lot of bass. When we put it on a listener, there's much less bass. And we ended up playing with it until we got this PINA, and it gets us really accurate measurements of leakage. And that's what it looks like there.
So was the PINA modified by chemical means, or did you cut it down with a razor blade?
We did it on a 3D printer. It's a good use of a 3D printer. Someone the other day emailed me and said, why are you paying all this money for ear simulators that are made out of machine, out of metal? Just use a 3D printer. So,
cadavers
are cheap. So, using a 3D, and then you verify, how well they simulate the ear or the actual measurements. But, yeah, using different silicons and different cure, you can eventually get the compliance right.
Are you going to publish anything on this, do you know? Or?
I think Todd may publish this, yeah. I think it would be a nice paper.
Yeah, that's something actually ought to be. I think it ought to be published.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are a lot of headphones that are made to sit on top of your ear and not go around it.
Yeah, super oral.
Is leakage a bit less of a big deal then, or is that... Are they just going to always sound bad no matter what?
Those are really hard to measure. But I think a more accurate ear might be get you a better measurement. But
those graphs where you have divergence between how well did the virtual earphone or the virtual headphone map onto the real previous headphone. When you had an error bar or a big error, that means that the model is not doing a good job of modeling the real experience.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a correlation there between were they all sort of the on top of ear ones, or the circumoral versus the?
They're all circumoral.
They're all in the same category.
Yeah, yeah. We haven't really done a lot of work on superoral yet. So the next thing we're focusing on is superoral and in ear, because.
So have you started making headphones yet?
No, we just do research. We don't. No, the funny thing is we're publishing all this. I read a review yesterday of a Beats headphone, Solo 2, and it's called Revisited or Redux, and they've improved it. And it shows a measurement of the Beats headphone, and it shows the Harman target curve, and it almost hits it. So Beats is now making headphones that look like they're reading our papers. So
are they really?
I don't know. There's a lot of laying off a lot of engineers right now. So from what I can tell.
But Tomlinson runs Apple's audio now, is that right?
He works with Apple, yeah. So I don't know why
he gets to do whatever he wants with them.
Yeah, I don't know if he decides, but. Yeah, there's a lot of changes right now in the headphone industry.
Do you have any anecdotal information that was relayed? What we're interested in as professional audio engineers to what people that have hearing loss are dealing with, and any correlation between this information. My father's 91, buys a new hearing aid, every 2 years. or something at the cost of $5,000 or $10,000. And you know, he claims he can hear better every time he buys a new one, but
a new hearing aid.
Yeah. So it would seem like the data for this and the data for hearing aid calculations, I guess, for how to get them to work better for people, they must be related in some ways.
It's partial, you know, from my understanding of the hearing aid business, it's got the highest dissatisfaction rate of any product. You know, more than half of the people who have one after weeks or days throw them away because they're unhappy with them. And I think a lot of it has to do with they're not properly calibrated when they go in. And and there's a lot of politics involved in that because it's expensive to go do it, and there's people like me, Killian, who think it should be done over the counter and it should be an easy, quick test. But there's one thing with hearing loss is there's this whole category now of headphones called hearing enhancement, I think it's called. And it's not a hearing aid, but they're trying to customize or adapt the headphone for your hearing deficiency. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in that whole.
Is that pretty far down the pipeline?
No, I mean, there's people talking about it now, and you know, it can involve, you know, noise cancellation. It can involve pretty well every hearing aid has a compressor in it, and but it's complicated because the hearing loss is very nonlinear. And there's this thing called recruitment where once you get above a certain threshold, people can hear quite fine.
Interesting.
But I notice when I go to classical concerts in L.A. at Disney Hall, there's a lot of, they always say turn off your cell phone before the performance, but they don't say turn off your hearing aid because they hear all the feedback, and it's quite funny. Any questions?
Well, let's have some water and some cookies. Yeah, thank you. We do have some door prizes, but you must be present to win the door prize.